A very pale young woman is sitting beside a barred window. Her hands are resting palms up on her thighs, and she's wearing a drab, shapeless dress. She closes her eyes and sees a driveway flanked by neat lawns and rows of trees. She catches glimpses of a little girl and boy, then an open grave containing a small coffin. She opens her eyes again and blankly stares ahead. A nurse is sitting in the corridor of an institution. Two young men bearing burn marks on their faces are playing chess together. A soldier crouches beside the wheelchair of a wounded man. The Turn of the Screw by Henry James. Screenplay by Sandy Welsh. A dark-haired man starts down a corridor just as a woman is being escorted from a room.
Dr. Fisher!
When are you going to let me out of here? You should be in here laughing!
London, 1921. Dr. Fisher stops next to the nurse and pulls open a shutter in a door. He sees that the bed is empty and that the pale young woman is still sitting next to the window in a straight-backed chair.
Has she said nothing at all today?
No. Nothing. As usual.
The nurse unlocks the door and the doctor steps inside. He sits on a chair and leafs through a case file. The young woman doesn't acknowledge his presence until he drops a photograph of a large country house on the floor. She looks across at it. Fisher realizes that her focus has changed.
What is it, Anne? Something you recognize?
Anne goes back to staring ahead.
I've told you, I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help you. Wouldn't it help if you could tell me about the terrible things that happened in this beautiful house?
Looking frustrated, Fisher takes out another photograph.
Tell me about Wigmore Street, Anne. You can do that.
Anne glances at the picture, then closes her eyes. She is transported to the residential street and has transformed into a bright-eyed young woman.
When you left home and went to Wigmore Street that day, you were excited, weren't you? You were young and innocent. In the big city for the first time. You wanted to make a good impression.
Anne recalls a clock on the mantelpiece at a comfortable drawing room. A fly buzzes past her seconds before a robust young man enters the room.
Ah, the new governess, if I'm not mistaken. You're not very old, are you? Forgive me, I'm sure you're quite old enough.
I'm 20. That is considered quite old in Suffolk.
I lost my only brother in the war. So here I am. All the others are long gone. I'm the only one left.
And the children?
Oh, of course, there's my niece and nephew. Orphans, poor things. Miles and Flora, strange little shadowy creatures. I'm responsible for them. Bly's our old country house. My London life is hardly suitable for children. And I don't need Bly, for now, anyway. I may need it in the future, of course, when I marry.
You are to be married?
In the abstract, I will be married. One day we men must people the earth again. But there are so many women. Beautiful, accomplished, virtuous. How can one choose? You're not the nervous sort, are you? Some girls are. That's not you, is it?
No. No, sir, it's not.
Because the post of governess, So many have left it before they even started.
The last girl, the pretty one I chose, Miss Jessel. I favored her, and she let me down. She left without even a week's notice. If I trust you with this job, you must promise, never to disturb me, never to worry me about anything.
He gently strokes the back of her hand.
I would never let you down, sir.
Then, if everything goes well, if you succeed where all the others failed, I will come and visit to inspect what you do.
The institution.
You need to talk to me, Anne.
Fisher looks down from his office window and sees a young man being restrained by two nurses while a priest reads from the Bible.
Why do you let those bloody priests in here? This is a place of science. Where was their God when those boys were at the Somme?
I hear you're in the women's wing again this afternoon. I don't understand what makes this case so fascinating. What is it that you're trying to achieve?
I don't know. I just know I have to try.
You can make your name on any of these soldiers' cases. That's where all the glory is. Young men who've been torn apart, who've been through unimaginable horrors. A female mind is less of a challenge. They don't have anything to do all day, so they imagine all kinds of things. What's the point of trying to save her soul? If she has one, that is. Or is that what you're looking for?
I'm convinced I'm getting somewhere with her. She's about to tell me what happened on the brink.
And the matter must take its course. If you're running out of time, soon it will be out of our hands.
Fisher has returned to Anne's room. He gives her a penetrating stare, then gets up from his seat and crosses to the window. He picks up a copy of the Bible, which has been resting on the sill, then throws it across the room. Anne's eyes widen in alarm, but she stays silent.
Well, we don't need that, do we? We've gone beyond that, haven't we?
Anne looks up at him.
Do you believe in God, Anne?
Fisher comes to stand in front of Anne.
I believe in the other.
Fisher looks uneasy.
You believe in the devil?
I've seen him.
We don't have much time, Anne. You need to tell me what happened. You need to take me there.
Fisher holds a picture of the country house in front of her, and images of ferns, sun-dappled leaves, and the house flash through Anne's mind. Fisher moves away, and Anne allows herself to journey into the past. She steps off a train carrying two cases.
It was a sunny day. A perfect day. That first day I went to Blythe.
Anne leaves the small station and sees that someone is waiting for her. She heads over to them and looks a little taken aback. From a distance, her escort appears to be a man, but close up, she realises it is in fact a plain woman in masculine garb. Anne offers her hand, but the woman ignores it and gestures for her to get into the car. Anne picks up her cases and climbs into the back seat of the open-top vehicle. As the car makes its way along a country lane, Anne looks across at cattle grazing in a field. The stern driver keeps her eyes fixed on the road ahead. As their journey continues and they reach the tree-lined driveway, Anne is looking a little put out by the driver's lack of communication. The slight she feels vanishes as the house comes into view. Her face lights up as they pass a stone ornament mottled by time. She shields her eyes to look up at the house. A woman wearing a black dress with crisp white cuffs, collar and cap stares down at Anne from an upstairs window.
Hello. Mrs. Gross.
Miss Hazeldene, welcome to Glyde.
I'm sorry, miss, that we haven't got a full complement of staff to greet you. Not like we used to have before the war. It's just us women now.
The female staff curtsy, and Mrs. Gross looks relieved, then hands an excited Anne a large key ring.
Of course, I don't know what the master might have told you to expect.
It is a very fine welcome. I hope we can be friends.
The looks on the faces of the staff is anything but friendly. Particular animosity is reserved for the woman Anne saw looking down at her from the window.
And where is Flora?
She was so excited when she knew you were coming. I think she's hiding. She's hoping that you'll play hide and seek with her. It's her favorite game.
Thank you.
Let's get back to work.
The staff disperse, and Anne makes her way up a staircase. Despite bright sunlight glowing at the windows, the rays have failed to penetrate the gloomy hall, lined with dark wood panelling.
Hello?
Anne continues up the staircase.
Flora? Where are you?
She reaches the upper floor landing.
It's all right, Flora. Don't worry, I'm coming.
For a moment, Anne hears a woman's sobs intermingling with the child's. She turns round and sees a little girl with long blonde hair standing behind her.
There you are. We've been waiting for you.
Anne smiles, then walks towards the young girl. Flora shakes her hand.
Was that you I heard playing the piano?
I play the piano very well. Miles does too, but better. Would you like to see my bedroom?
Flora takes Anne's hand and starts leading her away. Anne looks back over her shoulder, but there is no one there. Flora takes Anne into her pretty, sunlit bedroom, which is in stark contrast to the subdued austerity of the rest of the house.
Well?
It's beautiful.
Flora takes her by the hand and leads her down a corridor.
This is Miles's room. He doesn't like people going in and touching his things. He'll be home soon, so he can show you.
Not very soon, I think. Maybe at the end of term. It'll be a little while yet.
Flora lowers her eyes, then walks away.
Is my room so very far away?
You're to have the governess's room.
Did you like her, your last governess?
We all liked her. Uncle liked her especially.
Was she pretty?
Oh yes, she was just like a princess. This is your room. No! Not yet. You'll spoil the surprise.
Flora takes out her hair ribbon, and Anne kneels down when she realizes that the girl wants to blindfold her with it. The ribbon slips down, and Anne gives Flora the keys, then ties the blindfold herself. Flora gives her back the keys, then opens the door. She takes Anne by the hand and leads her inside. Flora takes her into the centre of the room. She closes the door behind them. Anne makes to remove the ribbon from her eyes.
You can't look. Not just yet.
Anne can make out areas of light and shade through the ribbon. She smiles at whispering voices.
Who is that? Is someone there with you?
She is aware of Flora passing her.
Stop it!
man becomes agitated and quickly pulls off the blindfold.
Do you like them? We spent all day yesterday picking them from the garden.
Anne steps forward to admire a vase filled with cottage garden flowers. She smiles at Flora, who rushes into her arms. Anne holds her close and cradles her head. Night has fallen. Anne closes her bedroom door and places a lantern on the windowsill. She undoes the clasp of a leather bag, then crosses to a wardrobe. She opens the door and sees a white, long-sleeved gown. She feels the creamy folds of sheer fabric, then takes out a set of underwear. She stares in wonder at the silk and lace garment. She plucks out a long blonde hair that has become entangled in the lace trim. She hangs the delicate garment back in the wardrobe and picks up her lantern. Someone, or something, is watching her from the gardens of the Bly estate. The hazy moon hanging in the night sky is superseded by bright sunshine and heavy clouds. Anne makes her way across a polished wooden floor and walks up the few steps which lead to Miles' corridor. A Great Dane dog is sitting outside the boy's bedroom.
Hello, boy. Where did you get to last night, eh? Hello? Who's there?
Anne cautiously walks past the growling dog and heads into the bedroom, which has a please do not disturb sign hanging from a hook on the partially open door. There is no one in the room, although a rocking horse is tipping back and forth.
Playing a game, were we, boy? I can see through your tricks.
Anne takes a look around the room. A framed 3D picture of a boat hangs on the wall, and a border patterned with dancing white mice runs round the centre of the walls. Dead beetles have been pinned onto a display board. As Anne looks at more model boats, the room seems to sway as if travelling on the open sea. Dead moths come to life and fly away. She sees photos of a very blonde boy.
There you are, miss.
Won't you call me Anne? Flora is so lovely. I can't believe Miles could be her equal.
Yes, Miss Flora is an angel. And Miles, well, you'll be quite carried away by him. You see if you're not.
I'm afraid I can get carried away by people quite easily. I got rather carried away in Wigmore Street.
Well, you wouldn't be the first. She's been up for hours. She's waiting to show you the garden.
Oh, I forgot to thank you for the flowers. In my room, Flora said you'd helped her pick them. Thank you for making me feel so welcome.
Anne leaves the room, and Mrs. Gross looks disquieted. Anne has joined Flora in the gardens. They walk alongside a red brick wall, then Flora picks a berry from a bush and pops it into her mouth. She's wearing a band round her head, with an ornate decoration of feathers on the side of it. Flora skips away and Anne turns back. She stops and stares at the master who has just walked into her eyeline. He smiles at her and removes his hat. She gazes at him with shy fascination.
I told you I would come if you did well.
Anne beams, then lowers her head to brush back her hair. When she looks up, the master has gone. She shakes her head and looks embarrassed by her daydream, then sets off on Flora's tail. She walks beneath an archway cut out of a hedgerow and spots Flora skipping away. Before setting off after her, she becomes aware of a man standing at the top of a turret attached to a tower. She blinks in the sunlight, and when she looks again, the man has disappeared. To Mrs. Gross.
You are sure that there isn't a gamekeeper? Someone from the village, maybe?
No, there's only been us women here since the master left.
I saw someone hiding on the tower. Are you sure none of the maids has a lover? Someone they're helping, with food, maybe?
Good Lord, no. No one here would do anything like that. This is a respectable house. You must have been mistaken. It's a wild garden. It's been a hot day, and if you're not used to it...
Anne is still looking distressed, but Mrs. Gross hands her the mail and walks away without saying another word. Anne is leafing through the letters when one in particular stands out to her. She stares at it, then puts it back in the pile.
Aren't you going to open that? It's letters from Uncle, isn't it?
It will be business, I'm sure. So I will read it later. In private.
Could Flora tell? How much I was longing to hear from him. How I wish the master would come home.
She imagines him kissing her.
Was he thinking of me, I wondered? Even a fraction as much as I thought of him.
As Anne cuts through the envelope and pulls out the letter, she imagines the master taking off his jacket and joining her in bed.
This is from the headmaster. He's an awful bore. Read him, deal with him, but don't bother me with it. Not a word to me, remember?
Anne looks disappointed at the brevity of the letter. She turns it over, hoping that he has written more, but the page is blank. She opens a second envelope. Anne stares down at a neatly typed letter addressed to Mr. Lawrence. Two words stand out to her, regret and Miles. She covers her mouth in shock.
Miles is dismissed from his school.
But why?
Miles may never go back at all.
They refuse to take him.
Absolutely.
Did they say why?
Here.
Oh. Such things are not for me. Master left you in charge.
Tell me honestly, Sarah, is Miles a bad boy?
Do they say so?
They go into no particulars. They simply express their regret that it will be impossible to keep him.
My God.
They can only have one meaning. He is a danger to the other boys.
Danger? Master Miles? That angel? Oh, he's scarcely 10 years old. Look, look at the prizes he's brought home.
Mrs. Gross directs Anne's attention to silver cups on the windowsill.
I told you Miles is coming home.
Flora and Anne are driven to the station. The young girl looks down the platform and sees the guard opening a door.
He's not here! He's not come home!
Some passengers climb on board, then a cloud of steam issues forth from the train. As it clears, Anne becomes aware of a small boy dressed in a top hat and tails. The boy puts down a case, then smiles. Flora runs towards her brother and they hug each other affectionately. Anne approaches the boy and he bows reverently, then kisses her gloved hand.
You certainly are pretty, just as much as Uncle said.
Here's old Baines. Still got that old motor running, Baines? Come along.
Baines, the driver, has saluted Miles. Miles has given Flora a doll.
She's so beautiful, Miles. Thank you. She's just like...
Anne looks troubled by the sudden silence. Miles whispers in his sister's ear.
What are you talking about?
Just chatting about school.
What about school? Did anything unusual happen at school, Miles?
No, nothing unusual. Just telling her about one of the little jokes I like to play.
Anne tries to smile, but looks disturbed by their laughter.
Here we are, Miles. Welcome home.
Anne looks back at the children with a cheerful expression, expecting them to be excited. She seems taken aback when she realizes that both of them are looking somber and a little frightened. They are holding each other's hands in a tight grip.
Here's Master Miles at last. Oh, there we are, Miss. Now we're back to our little family.
Yes. Everything's as it should be. Here's Grossy, here's the master's dog, and here's a pretty young governess. Everything is as it has always been.
Come and play. I've been waiting for so long.
I'm too old to play with little girls anymore.
Oh, it wouldn't hurt, would it? Just to look around the old place after being away all term.
Anne and Miles stare at each other.
Suppose it wouldn't hurt for a little while.
Mrs. Gross beams approvingly. Having given his hat to one servant and got another to remove his shoes for him, Miles chases Flora up the stairs. The children race along the landing. Reading a letter in the kitchen when Mrs. Gross comes in. She crosses to the large table and sprinkles flour onto some pastry. A fire crackles in the range.
Did you think what's to be done, Miss Anne?
You are sure this must be a mistake?
Now you've seen Master Miles. You can see he's as he always was. Do you really think we have to tell the master, miss?
No. I have decided. Even if we do have to find another school, it won't be before the autumn. We might mention it when the master comes to stay. But until then, we will enjoy the summer.
Anne drops the letter from Miles's school into the fire.
I had decided. I, who had always been the last to be considered. For the first time in my life, it seemed I was in charge. We were all alone at Bly, a world of women cast adrift. And for better or worse, I was the captain of the ship.
How long do you reckon she'll last?
Not long. We'll all think about fortnight.
I wager a week. Now Master Miles is back.
The cook and Baines realize that Anne can hear them. Rather than be ashamed, they stare at her with undisguised hostility before going their separate ways. Miles is playing the piano. Anne glances across at him as she makes her way to a window. She sees Flora picking flowers in the garden. The little girl walks away, holding a bouquet in her hand.
Flora! Where are you?
Anne is in the garden.
Flora! Can you hear me? Where are you going?
Anne leaves the garden and starts down a lane running past a church. She looks up at the grey stone building. Miles has moved to the window and presses his hand against the pane of glass. He looks out across the grounds with a blank and steady stare. Anne is walking along an uneven path snaking through the church graveyard. She sees that Flora has left her bouquet at the base of a headstone.
Miss Jessel. She left without even a week's notice.
The name Emily Jessel is engraved.
Who is it?
Anne has seen a dark figure standing in the shade of a tree. The person moves, revealing herself to be Mrs. Gross.
Oh, it's you. I thought you were a ghost.
Oh, no, miss. There are no ghosts here.
She died. Why did no one tell me?
It's a common enough story. I wish it wasn't, but there you are.
Mrs. Gross has a flashback to Emily Jessel, a young blonde woman, walking away from Bly, her heavily pregnant belly straining against her dress.
She killed herself, the poor wretch. Her lover had left. He ruined her. And she couldn't live without him.
Emily's dead body is floating in a lake.
She didn't have any family, so it seemed the decent thing to do to bury her here.
Anne and Mrs. Gross move away.
I didn't realize there was a church on the estate.
Oh, yes. We might get a service every month or so if we're lucky. I don't think God's much interested in us.
In the kitchen, Mrs. Gross brings Anne a framed photograph.
This was taken soon after she arrived here. The children loved her. She was a happy person until he came along.
Anne stares at the picture of Emily with the children. Flora and Miles are playing a duet on the piano.
As we went deeper into summer, I fell in love with Bly and the children. And they were beginning to trust me.
What a pity. We should mend it. Make it seaworthy. What do you say?
You? You can't do that.
Sometime later, a small rowing boat has been restored to its former glory. Anne pushes it away from a jetty and urges Miles to take an oar.
Come on. It's easy, I'll show you. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Flora gazes up into the branches of trees bending over the lake. As they glide through the green water, it seems as if someone is watching them from in amongst the reeds. Insects buzz, and a spider clings to its quivering web.
We've been sailing! Anne made the boat work!
That's clever of her.
Miles, don't forget this.
You can have it. You deserve it. Today.
My first real triumph. The master would be so proud of me.
Miles has presented Anne with a captain's hat. It is raining when Anne starts laying some flowers on a table. She looks up and sees a man staring in through the window.
There was a man at the window. He had blood on his face. I know what I saw.
There was a man at the window.
You are mistaken. I've told you, this is a respectable house. No one from the village would come here.
Do you think she's...
Children. You say he was staring straight at you?
Yes. No, not at first. He seemed to be looking around the room, looking for something.
Well, there you are, then. It must have been a burglar, and we won't be seeing him again. Well, he will have seen that there's nothing to steal here, and that Miss Anne has a scream on her that would raise the dead. He won't be back. Don't you worry.
You won't go, will you? Like the others?
Of course not. It'll take more than that to get rid of me.
Anne breathes heavily, struggling to hide her fear from the children. Daytime. Anne comes down the stairs and sees the maid who stared from the window when she first arrived.
Oh, you made me jump. What is it?
Anne starts to walk away.
You've seen him, haven't you?
What do you mean?
He's back. You can smell him.
Who? What do you mean?
The woman strides away, leaving Anne looking perturbed. Anne joins a servant and the children in the garden.
There you are.
Yes, I will.
The children run away, and Anne carries a tray with a jug of lemonade on it over to the woman she spoke to earlier.
What do you mean? He's come back.
Anne offers the woman a glass of lemonade and she accepts. She takes Anne into the gun room to see a picture of Miles and the Master posing with the man Anne saw at the window.
Him. The evil one. Quint.
He was the Master's valet, but he didn't do much serving.
You wouldn't believe what they got up to. Filthy, dirty, evil things. What do you mean, evil things? Thank you, miss. Come back later.
The maid, Carla, moves away, aware that Mrs. Gross has arrived. She allows a piece of material to fall over the picture so that Quint's face is half covered. Night has fallen. Anne lights her way to the gun room with a lamp. Carla suddenly stands up and startles her.
When the Master left for London, he left Peter Quint here, alone with us.
It's one man allowed to do whatever he liked. The war took all the men. There was no one to protect us from him. He got more and more violent.
Quint floors a maid, then kicks her down some stairs.
He's evil. He's death.
No one could resist him.
Quint throws Carla onto a bed and rapes her.
No one. How terrible. Couldn't you tell anyone? Send for the Master? No one cared what he got up to. And there were some that liked it.
Quint.
Mrs. Gross passes Emily and Quint sharing a passionate kiss.
Come on, Jessel.
He was particularly fond of ensnaring the governesses.
Gave him even more pleasure than us maids. And you think he's come back to carry on in the same way? He's come back to carry on with his evil ways. Sometimes, Quint took Master Miles hunting at night.
They were always together. That's why he's come back. He's come for the boy.
Who is it?
What is it? What's the matter? Is it the children?
Yes, I should think it is. What are you doing allowing that madman back in the house?
I'm sorry, miss. I should have warned you about poor Carla. She lost her fiancé and three brothers to the war. We gave her work and shelter because she didn't want to go home again. I'm afraid she's gone a little crazy, but she's harmless.
So none of what she said about Peter Quint is true?
Carla hates and is suspicious of all men now. Peter Quint was no angel, that's for sure. But I promise you, he's never coming back.
Seeing that Anne is still unconvinced, and despite the fact that it is the middle of the night, Mrs. Groves takes her out to the graveyard and shows her a headstone bearing Peter Quint's name. Anne is horrified.
No one knows how he died. He was always drunk. He was never careful.
The dog gallops up to the two women. Anne looks frightened.
He's come to take us home.
Mrs. Gross starts down the path, but Anne cannot resist looking back over her shoulder at Quint's grave. Wispy clouds drift across the night sky. Daytime. Anne stops when she sees Carla, then continues walking.
I didn't know what to think, or who to trust.
Anne heads upstairs and hears whispers behind her. As she nears a room, she hears the distinct voices of two men and a woman. She leans in to try and decipher what they are saying. She steals herself, then opens the door. She finds herself in a master suite. Miles is lying on the four-poster bed, and Flora is sitting at a dressing table. Anne stalks through the room, opening other doors, but the two children are alone. Miles watches Flora brush her long blonde hair. Anne looks unsettled, then joins the children and crosses her hands in front of her.
What are you doing in here?
We like it here.
Do you miss them very much?
Well, who do you mean?
Why, your parents, of course. This must be your father's room. Some things look as if they haven't been moved for years.
Flora was a baby when they died. I can't remember anything about them.
Not at all. Not what they look like. I don't believe I've ever heard you mention either of them. Not once.
They were the ones who died and left us. They're just a blur. A rubbed out blur, if you must know. No interest whatsoever. If they'd have cared about us, they wouldn't have left.
Anne is shocked. Miles has taken over brushing his sister's hair, and Anne wrests the brush from him and places it on the table. She looks repelled by the determined expression on the boy's face.
I think we all need some fresh air.
Flora slowly gets up and walks away. Miles looks at Anne with a defiant expression before moving off. Sitting on the riverbank, Anne holds up a fork.
So this is our Flora. Miles. Une fourchette. You'll be sorry when we get to the cakes if you can't give me the words. I was told that you were always the good one, that no one had ever seen you do bad things. Maybe no one stayed long enough to find out.
Miles is momentarily taken aback.
C'est un gâteau magnifique. Eh, c'est sûrement délicieux.
There.
I don't know any French words. Except... Au clair de la lune, mon ami Perrault. Prêtez-moi
ta plume, mon ami Perrault.
Ma chandelle est morte, je n'ai plus
Come along, Miles. We need the third. Who's going to hear you out here? Un, deux.
Au clair de la lune, mon ami Pedro. Au clair de la lune, mon ami Pedro.
Au clair de la lune, mon ami Pierrot. Prête-moi ta plume pour le client.
As the children are singing, Anne looks across the lake and sees a woman standing on the bank. Pale-faced and blonde-haired, it is Emily Jessel. Clouds drift in front of a full moon. Anne is asleep. She twitches and her brow furrows into a frown. She sees Emily duplicated on the lake's edge, then imagines the young woman making love with Quint. As Quint moves on top of her, Emily tilts her head back and takes a breath, which turns into a scream, waking Anne. She rubs her eyes, then sees Emily standing at the end of her bed. Anne sits up in alarm and hastens to light her lamp. When she holds it up, Emily is still there, shaking her head. She moves to the door and beckons for Anne to follow her. Anne nods in terror, then pulls back the covers and gets out of bed. She pulls on her dressing gown and steps out into the corridor. She follows Emily with a look of trepidation on her face. The phantom leads her into Flora's room. Anne sees the little girl climbing onto the sill in front of an open window. Anne walks towards Flora with her arm outstretched. Flora does not seem to have detected her presence in the room. Anne puts down her lamp, then clamps her hands round the girl and lifts her down from the sill.
What are you doing?
Don't be angry with us. We were just playing a game.
Anne hugs Flora, then glances out of the window. She sees Miles standing on the front lawn in his long white nightgown and staring up at the house.
Miles? Miles! What is it? What is it that you can see?
Carla's body falls past Flora's window and lands with a thud on the hard ground. A splash of red blood pools around her head.
What's happened? What is it?
Miles, I must go to him.
Leaving Mrs. Gross to comfort Flora, Anne rushes outside. She sees Carla's body and cannot stop herself from looking at the woman's face. Her forehead is bloodied and her legs are in an awkward, unnatural position.
It's all right, Miles. You're safe. Don't look, darling. It'll be all right.
She shouldn't have been up there. Stupid woman. We're not allowed. It's not surprising she fell.
Come on.
Hearing laughter, Anne looks up at the top of the house. Quint is standing there, his pale face glowing in the moonlight. She ushers Miles away, then hurries to the gun room to look once again at the photograph of Quint with Miles and the Master.
He's evil. He's death.
Anne stares at the picture in horror. The next morning, she is with Mrs. Gross in the kitchen.
Children are still asleep. Thank God.
I saw it, Sarah. I saw Peter Quint's ghost standing there, on the roof. He pushed Carla off.
You know that's not possible. You know there are no ghosts here. You've had a fright. You'll calm down and you'll realize that, of course, that's not what you saw. Carla tried to kill herself last winter. I thought she was getting better, but the grief must have overwhelmed her. It was a trick of the light, Miss Anne. Nothing more.
Dr. Fisher.
A trick of the light? Is that what you now believe? That you may have been mistaken? That some need deep inside you conjured up Peter Quint and Emily Jessel? That you were forced to pitch yourself against them, to vanquish them?
Dr. Fisher, have you gone completely mad working in this place? They wanted me to think I was mistaken. And they took great pains to make me think I was insane, as you do. But I know what those ghosts were up to. Carla knew too. That's why they killed her.
Let's say there were ghosts. What do you think they wanted?
It's so obvious. Quint had come back for Miles, and she was waiting to claim Flora.
Miles and Flora walk hand in hand with Quint and Emily.
Why? Did they want to harm them? What did they want with the children?
To possess them, of course. To make them like themselves. To live through them. To be together again. Men will be men and women will be women. Don't you know that yet? That's how it will always be.
It's all right.
A guard, alerted by her raised voice, is sent away by Fisher.
Were you frightened for yourself?
They corrupted the children while they were alive. I believe that the closer I got to teaching the children what was normal, what was right, the more they would try to stop me.
So what did you decide to do?
What women always do. I gave in, of course.
Mrs. Gross gives Anne a cup and saucer.
Of course you are right. I must have been mistaken. But like women also do, I was going to watch and wait. I had to protect the children.
It's a lovely day for a picnic, isn't it? Would anyone like some tea?
They used to have the most marvellous picnics here, on this side of the lake. Sometimes they go on till after midnight. You could see all the lights from the house.
I've made your favourite tea and biscuits, and if you're lucky, you can have a cake as well.
That was before the war, of course. Nothing like that happens now.
Doesn't the master entertain when he comes home?
Oh, he never comes home. That's not to say he won't when he hears how well you're doing.
You think I'm doing well, do you?
Of course you are. Why, the children love you. You are doing so well.
Some more tea, Miss Jessel? Or can I call you Emily?
Anne sees Emily. I know
exactly what you like. Sarah.
She's always loved playing with those dolls.
Shall I tear your hair up for you? It's getting a little hot out here. If you just sit still.
Anne moves towards Flora.
Flora? Who was that you were talking to?
Flora looks sullen.
I'll make it look very pretty for you.
As the party head back to the house, loaded down with picnic things, Anne pauses and looks behind her.
The situation was even worse than I thought.
What do you mean?
I thought my biggest task was to protect the children. Now I realize that the children not only knew about the ghosts, but wanted them to come back.
Anne is sitting on the grass reading a book. She looks across at Miles and Flora, who are playing a card game. In a glimpse into the past, she sees Quint and Emily sharing a blanket close by. Their intimacy is unrestrained, despite the children's presence. Anne turns away, looking distraught, and holds her hand to her forehead. Later, she carries a tray bearing glasses into the kitchen, joining Mrs. Gross, who is placing jars on a dresser. Anne puts the tray on the long table.
Did Miss Jessel take her lessons in the morning?
Excuse me?
I'm assuming she did actually try to teach.
Flora was very fond of Miss Jessel.
And yet she has never mentioned her to me. Not once. And Miles has never mentioned Peter Quint. Don't you think that's odd? If they like them so much. Unless they were trying to conceal them.
Mrs. Gross looks troubled and steps down from a chair.
The children were very lonely before they came. Miss Jessel was very pretty and very kind, and the children didn't see it.
Any depravity? Are you sure of that? I am not. I think they have seen more than children should see.
No.
The children have been neglected. They have had no useful parenting. Quint and Jessel taught them depravity while you looked the other way.
Come on, then.
This is just a tart.
We were so frightened. I was so frightened. We couldn't stop him. Are the children really spoiled, miss?
Anne takes Mrs. Gross out into the garden.
Look.
They watch Flora and Miles roll over and over on some blankets. Anne sees Quint and Emily do the same thing, then Quint presses his hand between her spread legs.
They're just children, miss. Playing children's games.
Mrs. Gross leaves, and Miles looks back at Anne with a sly smile.
I knew then that whatever else, Quint had taught Miles how to deceive. Education was the only weapon I could think of.
I don't know why you've bothered with all this. It's the summer holidays. I have lessons enough when I get back to school.
I know, but we don't know when or where that will be. So I thought we could have a few easy lessons.
What do you mean? I might not go back to school.
Anne turns her back on him.
Maybe I could write to Uncle. Ask him to sort things out if you're not going to.
Oh, yes. I should like to write to Uncle as well.
Anne looks uncomfortable.
Very well, I'll get some paper.
Anne reluctantly takes two pieces of paper out of a drawer and gives one to each of the children. Flora dips her pen in a pot of ink and immediately starts writing. Miles gives Anne a knowing, smug smile, which she can hardly bear to look at. Time passes. The children take up envelopes and lick along the flaps, then stick them down. They give their letters to Anne.
I'm sure your uncle will enjoy reading these.
Diane, will you bring those vegetables in? I've been waiting here for the last...
While Mrs. Gross is distracted, Anne throws the children's letters into the fire.
I still thought the master might come to my rescue. I didn't want him to lose faith in me.
Anne enters the schoolroom, and the children abruptly turn to face the blackboard with their arms neatly folded. Anne hears whispers and purposefully locks the door behind her. Looking unnerved, she crosses to the board and starts writing something down, acutely aware of the children's eyes boring into her back. Miles moves slightly and his chair creaks. Anne whips her head round.
The children thought I didn't realize what was going on. How they tried to distract me.
Anne turns round quickly, but the children have stopped whispering. When Anne turns around again, she sees Emily sitting just behind the children, smiling at her. Flora and Miles start giggling, and as the sound of Emily and Quint's laughter joins with theirs, Anne is overwhelmed and rushes from the room. Anne goes to her room and starts throwing her belongings into a small suitcase. As she slams the lid shut, she covers her mouth to try and suppress her sobs. Early morning, Anne opens a drawer in a dresser and takes out a letter. She rips it up and throws the pieces on the floor.
I didn't care anymore that the master would be disappointed.
Anne goes to Flora's room and sits on the bed. She leans over the girl and gives her a gentle, tender kiss on the forehead. Flora wakes up.
You're going. I told you that you would. Just like all the others.
Flora turns her back on her, and Anne closes her eyes regretfully. After a moment, she makes her way into Miles's room. He is sitting up in bed, reading a book.
So you're all packed, are you?
I've come to say goodbye.
It's not going to make much difference to me. I'll be back to school soon, doing what all boys do.
This was the time to say it, that he could not go back to school, because they did not want him. Because he'd been taught wicked things, things that normal children should not know. Tell me what happened at school, Miles.
Miles looks up at her, seeming as if he wants to speak, but then he lowers his gaze. Anne looks disappointed, then starts towards the door.
You see what we see, don't you? You know what we know.
Tell me, Miles. If you could only name them, I could help you banish them.
They look into each other's eyes.
There's Baines now. Have a safe trip.
Anne looks exasperated, then leaves the room. Miles looks up from his book for a moment, then turns his focus back onto the open pages. Mrs. Gross and some of the household staff are waiting outside when Anne leaves the house carrying her luggage. She gives Mrs. Gross the bulky keychain, then climbs into the car. As she does so, she sees the cook handing over some money to the woman she made a wager with.
I had let everyone down.
As the car pulls away, Anne stares up at the children, who are watching her from an upstairs window. Anne's face is pale, and her eyes rimmed red from crying.
I had no idea where I was going.
As the car makes its way along the stretch of drive flanked by trees, Anne sees Quint step out from behind one of them. As they pass the next tree, Quint emerges again.
You see what we see, don't you? You know what we know.
As the car reaches the end of the avenue, Anne sees Quint standing in the road behind them wearing a triumphant smirk.
Stop!
Baines puts on the brakes and Anne stares at Quint. Moments later, Baines pulls up in front of the house. The cook rushes out to take Anne's bags and gives her a welcoming smile. The children race over to Anne and throw their arms around her.
How could I leave you? Who else can protect you?
Hearing thunder overhead, Anne takes the children inside. That night, Mrs. Gross puts a cup and saucer on Anne's bedside table, then pulls the covers over the governess.
I don't remember anyone tucking me up to sleep before.
Mrs. Gross strokes Anne's hair, then moves her hand away. Dr. Fisher.
Would that make you sad? That you cannot remember any family tenderness?
It's got nothing to do with this.
What about your father?
He has nothing to do with this.
It says here he was a parson. A small country parish.
A defender. He saw himself as a warrior.
So you were an obedient child? You saw yourself as a defender of the faith, to please your father?
I hated my father.
We are the defenders of the faith. We will shield the weak from the devil. We will fight him to the death.
I thought I wasn't strong enough to be a warrior. At Bly, I discovered that I was.
Anne walks along a hallway and joins Mrs. Gross in a room where Miles is playing the piano. They both smile with pleasure at the young boy's accomplished playing. He beams at them. Mrs. Gross leaves the room. Anne heads out onto the terrace, then down some steps. Mrs. Gross is standing behind a maid working on a border. She raises her hand in greeting to Anne.
Where's Flora?
Isn't she with you?
No, I thought...
Anne looks alarmed and rushes back into the house. She goes to the room where Miles was playing the piano. He is gone, and a record turns on the gramophone.
They've gone.
They're locked everywhere. Maybe they're hiding in the schoolroom.
Not inside. They've escaped. They've gone to be with them.
Oh, my dear God.
Anne hurries out onto the terrace and down the steps, passing a stone statue of a bird of prey. She races across the lawn. Mrs. Gross looks concerned and heads off in a different direction. Anne pauses at the edge of the lake and looks around wildly, then sets off on a path that heads into a grove. She moves through the trees, then looks out across a mossy green stretch of river.
Flora, what are you doing?
I was just having a walk by the lake.
I'll be better.
Miles smacks Flora across the face, then holds her head under the water, replicating an argument between Emily and Quint.
You bitch! You have to learn! You have to learn!
Stop it! Stop it! Let me go!
That little bitch has to learn!
Quint appears in front of Anne, and she starts slapping him. Mrs. Gross hurries over and sees her striking Miles.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! What are you doing?
Mrs. Gross gathers the children to her bosom.
Now do you believe me? Come now, Flora, you must confess. Where are they, your special friends? The ones you had to trick us to get to see? There! Over there! Now we can see your friends. There you are. There's your Miss Jessel.
Let me go!
Admit it, take a look at them. Is that who you want to be with? Do you want to be a woman just like her?
Stop it! For pity's sake, there's nobody there! There's nobody there. Miss Anne, but they were there! I'm not playing games, you know it, Flora! You just have to tell the truth!
I don't know what you mean! I see nothing! I see nobody! I never have! I think you're cruel and I hate you! Take me away! Take me away from her!
Mrs. Gross stares at Anne with a pained expression on her face. Anne gives a slight nod, and the housekeeper starts to move away, with Flora clinging to her side. Miles follows after them.
Don't cry now. Sarah will take this. We'll find some dry.
As they are walking away, Miles looks back at Anne with a triumphant smile on his face. Anne is overcome and sinks to her knees, putting her hand over her mouth and nose. Later, she approaches Flora's room and hears the little girl's voice mingled with Emily's.
Don't let that damned woman near me! Keep that bitch from me! Damn her to hell, I say! No! No! Go away! Go away! No! Stop it!
That must have been terrible. Hearing the child saying those things about you, rejecting you.
No, don't you see? Now everybody could hear. No one could deny it. Not even Sarah.
I say, damn her to hell! No, make that whore go away! Don't let her hurt me! I say, damn her to hell!
At last, the full truth of Quint's corruption could be acknowledged.
Miles drinks whiskey and smokes a cigar as he watches Quint and Emily having sex.
Do you think he wanted to corrupt you, too?
What do you mean?
Were you afraid that he would corrupt you eventually, like he did all the other women?
You're here. At last.
Of course. Where else would I be?
Anne is lying in bed, and the master is kissing her. As he presses his hand on her thigh, he turns into Peter Quint. She shakes off the image.
I am trying to tell you what happened. I am not some hysterical female who only thinks of men. My one thought was of the children and how to save them.
Anne stares out of the window, and Fisher closes his case file looking dissatisfied. He heads down a staircase and through a door, then walks along a corridor. He hears whispering behind him and whips round. He has a brief glimpse of someone sidestepping into a room. He looks disturbed, then moves off. Sitting at a desk in his study, he reads the notes in Anne's file, then turns around to look at a range of sepia photographs of Bly and its grounds.
Don't you understand? I'm trying to help you. If we don't get to the truth, they'll take you away.
I'm not afraid of that. Thank you for your concern, but it's you I'm sorry for. You scientists. If you don't believe in evil, evil that will endure throughout the ages. If you don't believe in Quint, he will keep coming back for you.
Fisher gets up to look at the pictures more closely. His gaze falls onto a photo of the tower, and for a brief moment, he sees Quint standing on the turret. He blinks, and Quint disappears.
I believe you. I do. Now tell me about the last day.
He hesitantly places his hand on top of Anne's, and she gives him a searching look.
In many ways it was simple, now that I was truly alone. Now that the Master was not coming to save us.
She pictures the children alongside bugs and broken dolls.
now that it was a matter of life and death.
She remembers the violent argument.
I hate you!
I knew exactly what had to be done. We must take Flora away from here. From them. Straight to her uncle.
And what will you do, miss?
Oh, don't worry. Everything is in hand. I am staying. Make no mistake, I will do whatever it takes. I will be ready for them when they come.
Anne looks down on the household staff as they leave the house and pick up their luggage from the gravel driveway. The cook turns back and looks up at her, then gives her a nod. Mrs. Gross helps Flora into the car. Baines closes the door, then climbs up behind the wheel. As they set off, Mrs. Gross casts a worried look at the house, then draws Flora closer to her. Miles is sitting at one end of a polished dining table with a plate of food in front of him.
So we're all alone.
Are we?
Anne is sitting at the other end of the table.
Shall we go to church? When do you think I might get back to school? Well, I mean, playing with Flora is all right for the holidays, but I need to get on.
Get on? You know, Miles, you never did tell me what happened at school.
I have to grow up. I have to go back to school.
You never did tell me why you were sent home. Miles, I think the school have made up their minds. I don't think they will have you back.
Quint's voice joins forces with Miles's.
You're lying! You're a lying bitch!
Anne looks taken aback, then holds onto Miles's hand and leads him into the church. He removes his cap as they cross the threshold into the dark and peaceful building. Clouds drift in front of a full moon. Miles is sitting in the drawing room, reading a book. Anne steps into the room and looks at the boy with a sense of foreboding. She hesitantly crosses the room and takes a seat beside him.
Your hands are shaking. Are you frightened?
She shakes her head, then nods.
You know why, don't you?
She places her hand on his.
I know I'm not your mother, but I will always love you. And I will always be here if you want to come home.
Miles looks thoughtful, then hugs her. She closes her eyes and gives a pained smile. Hearing whispers, Miles tilts his head, then kisses Anne on the lips. As he does so, he becomes Quint and grasps her shoulders, forcing his embrace on her. Anne pushes him away.
You're very sweet. I love you too.
He's got to see that, Miles.
They're going to send him home. He's so bad.
Quint made sure you couldn't go back, didn't he? He made sure you'd have to return to Bly for good.
He's evil.
You think he is the only one to care. But he wanted to spoil you for the rest of the world so he could keep you here for himself. There's nowhere for you to go, Miles. You didn't ask why I was frightened. I'm frightened because I think he's coming. I think it will be soon, Miles. And I know I will have to fight him for you.
Miles takes her hand.
But you'll have to help me, Miles. You know that, don't you?
I think you should know. I've written to Uncle so he can sort things out. I gave the letter to Baines myself.
You know, Miles, I'm not sure. I don't think your uncle much cares.
Don't you think he can be made to care?
No, I don't. I don't think he cares much about us at all. I hoped he'd come, like you, so we could be a family, but he won't. He is so very indifferent.
They both hear a noise.
You know what has to be done, don't you, Miles? You have to name him, the one who is trying to possess you. You must name him, and you must tell him you want him to leave. Miles. Miles. Tell him you want to stay here with me. Tell him you want him to go.
Is he here? Is he here with us? Has he come for me? Has Quint come for me?
Don't you love us, Miles? Don't you want to stay with us? Tell him you want him to go.
Go! I want you to go!
Quint stops battering at the window. Anne and Miles spring out of their seats when they see Quint slowly walking towards them. His shadow is projected onto a wall and looms large. Miles' expression changes from fright to cruel amusement, and he turns on Anne.
You're just a pathetic, worthless bitch! Do you think you can stand up to him?
I will not let him take you. Tell him you want to stay with me!
Do you think you can stand up to me?
Miles starts to convulse and his body jerks as if possessed by something out of his control. Anne snatches him up in her arms and holds him tight.
I will not let you take him. I will not let you take him! I will not let you take him!
Miles struggles against her, juddering and twitching. She clings to him in desperation, then all of a sudden, Quint disappears. Miles exhales, then hangs limp in Anne's arms. She sinks down to the floor and cradles the dead boy. She breaks down in tears and rocks back and forth, stroking Miles's blonde hair. She draws his body closer to her and wraps him in her arms. A bird chirps outside the window of Anne's room.
It sang its heart out, that blackbird. As if it had stolen my boys.
Dr. Fisher stares at Anne as she rocks forward and back. She closes her eyes and a tear rolls down her cheek. Someone holds up a photograph of her holding Miles's body.
They think this was maybe a day or so after. They had to break down the doors. Found her sitting there with him, calm as can be.
A guard and a police officer have cuffed Anne's hands behind her back. They each take hold of an arm and guide her out of her room and along a corridor. A priest accompanies them.
May the Lord, in his love and mercy, help you with the grace of the Holy Spirit.
You don't believe her story, do you?
I don't know what unspeakable things happen in that beautiful house.
All this nonsense about ghosts and evil. It's a smokescreen. She was a young, inexperienced girl who fantasized about her employer, then fixated on this dead servant. Sad case, but you can't blame yourself.
Can I?
I mean, you did your best for her. Now you must get back to your real work.
If I hadn't been so sure I could help her, if I hadn't made her tell me.
Still would have been a dead child. Someone has to pay for that.
Dr. Fisher stares at his employer with tears welling in his eyes.
May the Lord...
Why do you find it so hard to believe in evil?
Help you...
Evil that endures.
Save your soul.
Anne looks back at Dr. Fisher and gives him a slight, helpless smile before climbing into the back of a black police van. The doors are locked, then the guard turns to Dr. Fisher. It's Quint. He smirks triumphantly. Fisher is taken aback, then the guard returns to being just another man in uniform. Anne peers out at Dr. Fisher, and her pale face is framed by the oval window at the back of the van. Mrs. Gross and Flora are walking through the churchyard. Flora places a bouquet at the base of a headstone engraved with Miles's name. Mrs. Gross joins her and gives the young girl's arm a comforting rub. They both stare at the inscription on the stone. Baines brings the car to a halt outside the house. Mrs. Gross is standing with the staff to welcome a new arrival. A young woman approaches the housekeeper.
Welcome, Miss Doughty. Welcome to Bly.
The replacement governess, Miss Doughty, walks up the stairs. She bears a number of similarities to Anne, with her dark hair, meek demeanor, and youthful complexion. She heads into a room where Flora is playing the piano. The young girl stops and smiles at the new arrival.
There you are, at last. We've been waiting for you.